my colleagues all depend on records. So please, if you're involved in these, in this industry, in these businesses, please keep your records. Please preserve them. The documents you produce today are the fodder for tomorrow's historians. And what I'm going to talk about is what's been happening in the last few decades with pornography, with the technology involved, and how we've seen a breakdown. Historically, pornography was produced, distributed, and then consumed separately. Produced somewhere else, distributed to images of the seedy shop down in a crumbling downtown, or if you're in the state of Pennsylvania, in a X-rated shop at the edge of town. The reason I know this is if you've ever driven through Pennsylvania, you can always tell where a town legally ends because there's an X-rated shop. Very odd for those of us going through it the first time. What we've seen in the last few decades, and I'll be explaining how, is these barriers have broken down, that it's now possible, has been possible for the last decade or two, to be your own producer, distributor, and consumer of pornography, and that this is going to change the nature of a pornographic, and it's going to be part of this larger trend of what we call innovation from below, that is opposed to ideas, innovations percolating from the top of companies and then going out to the masses. The masses are taking these technologies and changing the ways they were thought of, contemplating, and used. And at the risk of sounding like an economist, what we're seeing happen is the barriers to entry to producing, distributing, consuming pornography have been reduced, and the cost of doing so, the transition cost, have gone down greatly. What that means is that it's a lot easier to do that, and as we'll see also, there's a lot easier information about how to be your own pornographer that's widely available. I'm going to focus on the technology here, and you probably heard the phrase black boxing. It basically means taking the skills and processes involved in doing something. For instance, the skills of, if you've driven a manual car, a car with a manual transmission, taking those skills to shift the car smoothly, accurately, putting that in an automatic transmission and making it possible for, hypothetical example, my mother to easily drive a car. Usually when we talk about black boxing, it's used in terms of de-skilling. The workers are de-skilled. Management is using these black boxing technology to basically take the skills away from the workers, put them in these machines, and replace them with lower cost labor. That's one way of viewing black boxing. Another way, the way I'm going to use it here, is you're making it possible for more people to do activities that beforehand were in the realm of experts, beforehand demanded expensive equipment, but now anybody can. An important part of this, and a couple of the other speakers alluded to this also, it's not enough just to have the skills black boxed in a camera. What's very, very important, and why we're here talking about technology and pornography, is mass production and low costs have made it possible for almost anybody to be a do-it-yourselfer. And this is a key component that, I've seen a couple of video cameras here. You know, what you've got in those cameras 10, 20, 30 years ago, you'd be talking about an entire film crew, several thousand dollars of equipment being able to do that, and now, wow. So mass production is very, very important to making this equipment accessible to a large number of people. I'm going to start out with do-it-yourself photography. And I'm going to start out with Edwin Land and his Polaroid camera. First Polaroid camera comes out in 1948. This is right here, the Swinger camera, came out in 1965. Nice, innocent name, the Swinger camera. If you looked at the photographs from Swingers and Polaroids, they're really pretty poor quality. But they've got one amazing advantage in that you develop it yourself. You don't have to take it to the local pharmacist and have him develop it and him say, here you go, by the way, I thought those pictures you took of the your car are really, really good. And indeed, one historian wrote, quote, when Land's camera came out, the Polaroid gave freedom from, quote, the censoring eye of the localing druggist or the oogling leer of the film laboratory technician. This was enough of a boon to single-handedly assure Edwin Land's spot in photographic heaven, quote, unquote. The real boom, however, with do-it-yourself photography came with the SX-70, right here, introduced in 1972. At the time, it was the world's most complex piece of consumer equipment. It's self-focusing, it folded up, and it took pretty good pictures. And as a character in one of John Updike's novels wrote, SX that must stand for sex. Pretty interesting. You can take your own pictures. You can take whatever pictures you want. Really neat. But the real action, the real do-it-yourself movement, begins with video. Seeing here is a Betamax from the mid-1970s. This is a particular favorite image of mine. It's a picture of somebody's home theater. If you get a sense of how much home entertainment has changed, I particularly like the nice blue sky. But what do-it-yourself video does, what the video cassette recorder enables, is that for the first time you can watch whatever you want in the privacy of your own home. This is pretty exciting stuff. You can go to the video store, which starts setting up shop in towns and often has that curtained-off area. Or if you're really cautious, you can go to the next town over, the other side of town, and go to the curtained-off area. By the way, for those of you who don't like the giant corporations and like small-scale capitalism, it's the large-scale corporations anxious to keep a good public image that are more likely not to carry pornographic tapes, and the small mom-and-pop stores that are more likely to carry the pornographic tapes, if only because they're more profitable, as a rule, than regular tapes. You notice the strong thread of capitalist opportunity running through here. This is kind of exciting. You've got privacy in your own home. You can watch it. But the real excitement is going to come with this clunker. It's a VHS recorder. It's big. It's heavy. And what it means, you can make your own movies. You can make your own videos. And a lot of people do. What really makes this take off, the first of these appears early 1980s, and you actually see the first distribution shop for amateur pornographic videos appearing in 1980. Not until the late 80s does do-it-yourself video really, really take off, although there were a few, like Isaac Asimov, the great science fiction and science fact writer, who said in 1981, wow, this is really going to be neat. And it's not until 1989, 1990, with the addition of low-light level and anti-jitter options in video recorder, in camcorders, that this really begins to take off, that you begin to see the popular media pay attention to it. You begin to see what's quite interesting. People not only making their own pornographic videos, and by the way, if you read the articles from this time period, there's always a warning at the end, make sure you lock them up so your children don't find them. Or that if you're going to, make sure that you take the video out of the video recorder before returning it, or that you mark it because... But what you see happening is that a number of people go beyond just taking pictures of themselves, but they begin to take videos of themselves and then they begin to market it. You see networks of distributors setting up shop to take these homemade amateur pornography videos and create a marketing infrastructure that will distribute them nationwide. And you actually, and showing all the signs of the voluntary coming together that de Tocqueville wrote about, you see do-it-yourself video sex developing its own journal, amateur video guide, its own conventions. This is all fairly much under the radar, but it's there, and you begin to see specials like, yeah, this is 1982, home video. That is to say, there's a large and growing interest in people making their own pornography at home. And they can do this for the first time in their lives without anybody watching, without anybody knowing. Unless, of course, they want to go semi-pro and market it, in which case, everybody knows. And that raises a question. How do people learn? How do you, if you want to make your own video, if you want to distribute it, how do you do that? You know, there's not this gene. You know, we aren't encoded with this sense of, okay, let's do this. And I'm going to be looking at a couple of things. Important one, the networks, informal worlds networks start to develop. This being California, this is a journal of the Swingers Digest that serves both North and Southern California. I'm not doing regional favorites here. There's a huge informal, under the radar set of networks of people who meet devoted to exchanging information. This, by the way, if you note, this is on something called paper. And it was put in the public, nice, easy to carry. A lot of production, if any of you have, and it looks like some of you are old enough, if you've ever put out paper newsletters, this is a lot of work to do. This particular one, if you're selling for $5.95 in the 1990s, this is a magazine. This is California. People have money. If they can afford the homes here, they can afford $6. So it's very well organized out here. Other places, less elaborate. But then you get, well, how do you know? How do you learn these things? And this is where you get to the world of facilitators. That is, people and groups and books and journals that will give you handy hints. And I don't know if you can read the fine print here, but it's how you can find attractive women to star in your own adult films, make money, and quit work in 7 weeks. And again, it's aiming at a mostly male audience. Or you can look at this and say, boy, can I really do this, or is this a demonstration that there's a sucker born every minute? But this is the adult video business, old hat. When we talk about the internet, we've got books like Adult Website Money, How to Build, Start, and Market an Adult Website Business for Little to No Cost in 30 Days. And this, by the way, enough people bought this book from this author that he came out with volume two. And here's How to Be an Internet Pornographer, How to Be a Porn Director. All of this, by the way, is available today on Amazon.com. In other words, that here you have guides to help you in a way that you really couldn't have found out before. So you've got, with the technology, easier access to this is how I do it. You've got guides, you've got informal networks of people who are wanting, who will help you do it. But wait, there's more. You want to put up your own website, but you don't have the skills. There's help. For a small amount of money, and these are just a few of them, these people will design your own website for you. In some cases, they'll provide the content. You just have to supply the money. In other words, this is black boxing to an extreme. Adult Webmaster School, by the way, actually offers classes and a lot more. Again, all of this information easily available on the internet, making it easier and easier for anybody to take the technology and then use it. And the big change, of course, comes with the web, starting in the mid-90s. And what the web does is, makes it easy to produce, to consume, to distribute, fill in the blank, anything. And again, one of the really neat aspects of looking at do-it-yourself pornography is that the same trends you're seeing here are apparent in a lot of other areas, a lot of other industries. One of the reasons for doing this, one of the reasons it's so big, is the profits. I mean, the web is really the first part of the internet to make money. And if you've got people buying books like this, it's one of the reasons why. And you're seeing, when you talk about decentralization of access, anybody can. There's so much to find out. There's so much to get. Some of it may even be accurate or not. You've got places that you've got your cell phone, you've got your GPS, you can call up your friends, really, really neat. There are, one of the great changes in the mid-1990s, two-way communication, see you, see me, with the webcam. That is, you can now directly stream something over the web. You can put anything over the web. In fact, we're on the web now. And one of the most fascinating aspects of the web is how many amateur pornographic sites are out there. One of the, a 2001 survey that estimated that 70% of the pornographic websites were amateur. Now, anytime you see a number with pornography industry, take it with large quantities of salt. But even if you're off by a large factor there, that's still a lot of people. That is, you have a lot of people not only making their own pornography, or in some cases stealing it from other people on the web, sharing, but you then have them distributing it. And that's something that's really, really new. And not so much sharing, in some cases sharing it for profit, in some cases just putting it up there. You've got technologies like site links where your website can be linked to somebody else's website or put in a collection of websites, creating whole new concepts, whole new worlds of community that even Isaac Asimov did not imagine 10 years ago. Here we're doing high tech. Well, all right, that's mid-1990s high tech. Let me talk about something that's pretty low tech, but is still fairly impressive, of the rise of the sex tool party. This is something that is fairly low profile. You know, when you for those of you who don't know, they're sort of like Tupperware parties. It seems to be a popular analogy today. But basically, instead of showing off the latest in plastic containers, you have a friend who goes over, and you know, here it is, running your own party business has its rewards. And one of the problems of the, I don't know if it's just the pornography industry, but their grammar is very bad. That's an IT apostrophe S, and don't. Anyway, I used to be a college newspaper editor, and my students know that they learn to write properly and correctly. But what it is, you have some friends over, you show them this range of products, and demonstrate it, and you get, you know, if they buy anything, you get a share of the profits. It's sort of like a pyramid scheme. These have been multiplying greatly in the last decade or so, and in a way, they're probably as revolutionary or as important as all the technologies I've been showing you, because what this is doing is that it's making these particular technologies or sex toys not just available to a lot of people, because, whoa, you know, you can buy that from, you know, the internet anytime, or except for Alabama, going to a shop and buy things. But what you're doing here is that, and here this is more of a question of social organization, social trust, as opposed to technology. You're learning about this from a friend or a friend of a friend, that is, someone who's trusted. It may come with a demonstration, but there's a much, it's not, here's this technology, here, take it. It's, here's this technology, here's how you use it. And the fact that you've got these occurring at such scale means that this may be as important as the internet in giving people a chance to experience technologies, approaches to sexuality that they never had before. It's a very low-tech approach, but it's very, very effective. Nobody has, there have been a few works on the subject, but when you hear people talking about the dangers of pornography today, it's mostly talking about the internet and not about the sex tool parties. But in terms of changing mores, this may be almost as important, though again, not quite as visible. Okay. Well, what does all of this mean? Apart from the fact that I can pull images off of the web and put them in PowerPoint, which is actually shows you how well black box that technology is. We're seeing a lot of changes. These new technologies encourage both anonymity and community, two contradictory things. But you know, the old New Yorker cartoon, you know, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. You know, comes there. Sort of the same approach, why were towns so feared as a disruptor of the social order in a rural environment? Because people could be anonymous and engage in activities that they wouldn't do if they lived in a village. Internet is somewhat the same way, although if you have any aspirations for higher office, there are certain things you should not put on video or on the net. By the way, for any of you thinking of seeking jobs, change your silly internet email address to something a bit more serious. Trust me on that one. And if you're looking, as long as I'm giving advice, if you're looking for a job in corporate America, learn how to play golf. And not just corporate America. Golf is a good way of climbing the ladder. Okay. So, but, sorry. But academics have useful advice at times. But the internet is also very good for creating a sense of community. Maybe an artificial sense, but a sense of interest sharing, of and a sense of setting values. You're seeing communities of practitioners emerging, of these shared communities of everything from fly fishing to alt.sex.StarTrek. Which, by the way, existed in fanzine form before, well before the net. And you know, you're getting a whole range of activities that before nobody knew about, or nobody knew that you may not know now. But now, to give you a quote from Fleshbot.com, it describes itself as, quote, a frequently updated web magazine which showcases all the porn that digital technology and distribution has made possible. This includes CGI and morphed images, amateur girls, webcam guys, sex blogs, hentai now, accidental smut, vintage erotica, celebrity candids, and hardcore video. 10 years ago, if you had given that list to anybody, most people would have no idea what you're talking about. And now all you need is a search engine and it's there. By the way, if you go to a place like wordtracker.com, if you look at the most requested information, the most requested search terms, they're overwhelmingly pornographic. A lot of the lists, and that's still today. You know, if you look at a lot of the lists that Lycos and some of the other firms put out, they've been sanitized. You can get the original ones, but there's an overwhelming interest in sex and pornography out today. And you're seeing this both at an anonymous level too, but if you go to a local, there's local setups too. For instance, if you go to New York City, I apologize, I don't know the San Francisco scene, you've got groups like One Leg Up, Skin New York City, Cake, and other groups where the income comes from monthly membership fees and party charges. Again, uses of the internet that nobody expected 10 years ago. In the same way that if you talked to the inventors of the digital computer, the developers of digital computers half a century ago, and said that some of the most exciting cutting-edge technology is coming from games, they would have looked at you oddly, because everybody knew that working on atomic weapon codes was the way of the future. It shows you how things evolved. Let me close with two quotes. One is from one of the founders of the field of history of technology, Mel Kranzberg, who stated that technology is neither good nor bad, nor is it neutral. When I ask my students, I ask them, okay, what's the relationship between people and the technologies that they use? I ask them, well, what should technology be used for? Or what technology is? A lot of them say it's to enhance or to improve people's lives. Anything, a technology is good if it gives people what they want, what they need. By that standard, cybersex is a very good technology. Because pornography does raise serious issues about the future shaping of our societies, it does seem appropriate to consider that technology is what we make of it, what we can make of it. Lastly, I do love quotes. Yesterday was the 50th anniversary, no, sorry, 2 days ago, 50th anniversary of Sputnik. Isaac Asimov, also in 1981, said, "To the stars through sex and video might well be the slogan of the future." And he was specifically writing about, wow, maybe the experience of zero-G, of sex in zero gravity, might be so exciting that will help create a market for people going up into space. You know, this could be really exciting. Where Asimov fell short, and this is the hazards of technological predictions and running into reality, he didn't know that roughly half of the people who go into space today, in these highly trained space shuttle crews, even with the benefit of tens of millions of dollars of research over four decades into humans going into space, half the people going into space still get space sick. That is to say, if you think seasickness is bad, try space sickness. The purpose of this, we can extrapolate what we want, we should, because we can shape technologies. We can do what we make of them, but technologies have consequences. Thank you.
Okay, I have to add, there is a porn movie out there for a couple of years now. It's called Project Uranus. You get it? And it was the first porn picture with a zero gravity cum shot in it. And they did it like the Russian space agency provided them like a parabolic aircraft where they do the zero gravity thing. So go to the net, Project Uranus, blog it, Twitter it, whatever. Try to download it. It's impressive, I guess. Okay. One or two short questions, please, because we're pretty much back in time. Back in time, that's science fiction too. Okay.
You talked about the web being decentralized. Why do you suppose, even in today, it's been 12 years, if you're dating it from 95, books are still highly regulated with pornography and erotic content. As you mentioned early on, physical spaces are still, to this day, Alabama being very highly regulated. How come the web, do you suppose, has been allowed? Cable TV, even though it's inside the house, think, okay, maybe it's because it's inside the house, but cable TV, why do you suppose the web is still allowed to kind of, I can go to this adult webmaster school and 48 hours I can have my own website up there and it's totally pornographic?
Probably better ways of spending your money, but no, that's not from lack of trying. That is, there have been a number of efforts by a lot of countries to regulate the web, to prevent pornography, to prevent political expression, to prevent religious expression. I forget the name of the Harvard group, but it has a list of censorship imposed by each country. What makes the United States different from, say, China, is the First Amendment. But again, there was the Communications Decency Act of, I think, 1996, which was struck down. There have been a lot of efforts to try to regulate that. If you look at some parts of the pornography industry, you've got ASCAP, which is a self-regulating group, a group of sites against child pornography. And there are some, regulations, but part of the challenge is where's the locality that you can actually try a case in?
Just wanted to add to what she was just mentioning. There have been, of course, several pushes to try and regulate the internet, typically for the children. And right now there's a discussion and a big push to give the FCC regulatory abilities over the internet. And it's questionable whether that's going to succeed or not. But if it does, of course, that's going to change the environment significantly. So as the cliche goes, this would be a good time to...